Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Unknown Show. Host mostly. Next show, we'll have Mark Brunetti, publisher of the AM at Gatoway House. We're also going to talk to Matt K. Mennonite. Thanks for tuning in to listen to the show. First caller, first guest of the night is going to be Mark Brunetti, and I believe he's on the line now. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How's it going, all right?
Yeah, it's going pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. just got off work a little while ago, and one of the top days here in the city. So what are you doing right now? Where are you calling from?
Oh, man. Well, I'm calling from my house in Edison. And right now in the background, as I'm doing this interview, on the TV is probably one of the most epic movies I had growing up, Independence Day.
Oh, that's on the TV.
Yeah. They just blew up all of New York and every other place on the planet.
It's amazing that they haven't made a sequel to that yet. Not that I'm not complaining.
Oh, man, we should write prequels to it, actually. What was going on all before the movie.
And it should be like, the prequels will be aliens, like, growing up on the planet, and they're like, you're rooting for them. And then they just get fucked up. The whole movie is silly as fuck, because there's no way in hell we would have ever won against those aliens under those circumstances.
Bud Smith, don't make me stop this interview right now.
They had Will Smith
on their side.
Yeah, but they also they were killed by, like, he hacked into their computers and gave them a virus. That's like the craziest fucking stupid way to kill aliens I've ever heard of.
Listen, you're going to be the first to go when the aliens come. You're going to be the first to go. All right, but how you doing, bud?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I walked up the street and bought a fucking microphone set for this shit. I was doing it over my phone for the longest time, so I don't know if this is going to sound any better. It's maybe it will, maybe it will. I'm sure you can't tell.
That's all right. You kind of cut in and out a little bit, but that's all right. It'll get cleared up.
Yeah, I think that's the blog talk is just like that. It's sometimes when people call into the show, you can't hear what the fuck you got in.
Yeah.
So anyway, I want to talk to you about, you just graduated, didn't you? You just graduated from college, the other day?
Yeah, William Patterson University. I guess I'm an official writer now. I got that MFA degree everyone keeps talking about.
Do you think Well, what's your plans to do your MFA? Anything or nothing?
I don't know. I feel like, well, I guess I haven't really dwelled too much into it, but I feel it's going to give me a little bit more credibility in the professional world. You know, I'm going to start applying to some colleges and seeing if I can teach some lit courses and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. But there's definitely that huge debate, like, do MFA programs work kind of thing? Like, are they legit? Do you need them to be a writer at all kind of thing? And, yeah, it was a good road to take. I definitely recommend it. I don't know. Some people put it down. Some people highly recommend it. I'm on the recommended side. If it feels right, then do it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the type of person to put it down for any reason. Because, I mean, does it help you be a better writer? I'm probably just because, guess what? The more you study and practice, the better you're going to be. And some people could just use a little direction. I've had nothing but good things come out of learning new things. So there you go, right?
Yeah. I feel it's just all about, you just got to do something, whether if you're going to school for it or going to a lot of readings or like publishing stuff and sending out material. Like, as long as if you're doing something, you're doing something right. And I don't feel that either way is right or wrong.
Oh, yeah.
The, field.
Yeah, it's all part of that. It's all part of that. Just like to be doing a little bit of everything. Be a little punk rock about that. Be a little more professional about it. All those things and more are together, right? So you're really a busy guy because you got products going on. And the one I'm usually most interested in and enamored with is your idiom zine, which we talk a little bit about that. What idiom people don't know?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, the current issue, I have like 3 or 4 writers in here who heard me when I was interviewed briefly on one of your previous shows. They heard me, they sent me some stuff, and, you know, the people always ask, how do you get published in any magazine? And sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, having some kind of personal connection with it. You know, they always tell you to read the magazine first. But, yeah, a bunch of people sent me stuff. They were like, hey, I heard you on Bud's show. So, you know, we took some careful consideration, and they pretty much all made it in.
Yeah, I think, do you recall Finn? Did you get something from Kevin Ridgway?
Yeah, I got Kevin Ridgway, I got Frank Reardon in here.
Uh-huh.
I got Alethea in there.
Alethea Dremmer,
and
Frank Reardon, and Kevin Ridgway. Those guys are all great. Alethea is really awesome. She sent a nonfiction essay about how she became an ER nurse last month, which is really great. Frank is actually going on tour. He's going to do some poetry readings all up the East Coast. He's one of these that really takes it seriously when somebody puts a book out by him. He hits the road and does a tour behind it. So.
He's coming out with a book with Punk Hostage Press, which is a really cool press to check out.
Badass, man. That's A Razor
cool.
And Iris Berry out of L.A. They do some cool stuff. They do some cool stuff out there. And of course, Kevin Ridgway, man. He's always got some cool shit floating around. He's a prolific. Right.
Let me ask you if you know either of these guys. Do you know Ryan Swofford or Matthew J. Hall?
Yeah, I know Ryan Swofford. Yeah, he's runs the Weekenders literary, and he's a new rocker. He's got a band going now. He's like a 18 or 19 year old kid. He lives in like Washington, and Matt, I don't know who he is.
Yeah, he did. He got it in the next issue too, so pretty cool.
Man, so the idiom.
Yeah, but see you, go ahead.
What's the story with the idiom? How long has it been around?
Oh, it's been going, volume 8 now? So pretty much 8 years, pretty much every October. It's a new year for me, so this is the 8th year. We'll be coming up to our 9th pretty soon.
It's great.
So, and it's pretty much, you know, a homemade pamphlet I handed out for free. I have a copy of it available online, which is actually about to get a lot bigger. I'm gonna make it where people send in audio files of them reading and maybe even video if they can do that and stuff. And I'm gonna include that in the online issue of the Idiom, where people can download an interactive PDF.
Oh, that's
and,
great.
They can kind of deal with the poems a little bit more than just reading them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds really sick, man. So the Idiom is a black and white handmade pamphlet. How do you typically make it? Is it it's cut and paste with a copy machine?
Well, first I put it up on the computer. I just recently, over the past year, started using Adobe InDesign. Before that, I used Microsoft Word. And then, print it out, and then I got a black and white photocopy machine here. And, I just put on a good movie, print out a bunch of copies. I got a little pamphlet stapler, and put them all in order, and then just staple them together.
The coolest thing I think about doing a handmade zine is just like, it's just like a physical art project, keeping that still alive. And it's kind of cool, just like connecting with people, sending stuff through the mail. You must get a lot of response from people just by sending shit in the mail, right?
Yeah. Whoever's in it, I usually mail them a big pile of idioms to get to their friends and put in places. So that's pretty much my distribution thing right now.
So over the years, I've probably been in maybe like 5 or 6 of your. Maybe more, but you've given me hundreds of these things, man. I feel like I'm giving them out to people all the time, especially when they, people come. Just the other day, my friend William here from Denver, and he was sitting out with me drinking some beer in the apartment, and I was like, oh, wait, hold on, I got some more zines for you. And just like every shelf, there seems to be some idioms. Oh, here's another one. I have 50 of this. Yeah, so people are still getting, they're still being handed out, and they're like 8 years old, or 6 years old, whatever they are. It's funny.
Yeah, we're like the little gremlins of the literary world. Like, we might not be the fanciest looking magazine, but there's a fuck lot of us out there. I just make like 1,000 per issue and just give them to people and hand them all out. So like, people are like. Oh, yeah, the Idiom, that's like a homemade thing, but everybody seems to, kind of heard about it somewhere, where it kind of gives a little more reputation than other magazines, I think.
I think if anybody has a problem or don't take a homemade magazine as seriously as something that's something fancy put up online, and then that's their only vehicle, that says something about the purpose. It's a cool thing. People take time to make it a physical object you can hold, and then they mail it to you. But the thing with the Idiom that I always thought was cool was I used to live down in Jersey, and I used to before I even used to write, which I really only got into writing and submitting those two things together, maybe around 2005, 2004, Actually, I found the Idiom when I learned about you guys. It was at a bar. You guys had left a bunch of them there. And I'll tell the story real quick. It was the bar called the Bright Bar in West Long Branch. And I went to use the toilet, and the toilet was full of Idiom magazines, stuck to the top. I went to the bartender. I didn't know what they were. I just saw the toilet was completely clogged, and I said, all right. So I walk over to the bartender. The bar was pretty dead, and I said to her, I said, hey, listen, there's a problem with the toilet. It's full of like magazines. And she knew right away. She was like, yeah, people think it's funny. They stuff the toilet with these things that these guys keep leaving here. And then she gave me a copy and an Idiom. That was the first time I ever saw it, and I thought to myself, man, I gotta send these guys something. I was just leafing through it, and I hope a lot of other people have come into contact with your book in great ways like I did. It was just really interesting seeing it floating around.
At the Brighton Bar, there were monthly readings there. So every month, once a month, I would go there and usually have a new issue or something. And, you know, making the magazine, you make both friends and you make enemies because, you know, you can't publish everything and everybody. So some of the enemies I might have made might have, you know, I would leave some at the Brighton, and then at the end of the night, they might take them, stuff them in the toilet.
Maybe my friends
would do that, too. My friends would do something like that, too.
Oh, yeah. I bet it was just like sometimes the locals at the Brighton were a little sketchy, you know what I mean? Like, just kind of like little sketchy people. Maybe it was like somebody who didn't write it all was just like, fuck these poets. I see that. The hatred for the poet out there. So you actually have some great anthologies of the idiom on Amazon. I know you have at least one of them. I looked for the other one. I didn't see it up there. I have one now. Amazon. I saw. Let me see. It was just the volume one, which was like. It went all the way up to maybe it was like the first couple years of the idiom, you know.
Each of the anthologies are pretty much two volumes in one, and that's 10 little issues in one book. We got two of them right now, so we got two of them going on. We're working on the third one probably this summer and this year and getting it out there and all. So
I think you can't go wrong with Chinese. Anybody who's interested in what poetry in at the Jersey Shore looks like, this is like the total stamp of what that is. If you can imagine, if you're interested in if you're interested in the television show Jersey Shore, pick these idiot anthologies on Amazon, right, Mark?
I should have gotten it in the Jersey Shore house.
Yeah, you should go and. Solicit shit from them.
Had Snooki take a shit on it or something.
Yeah, she would dump on it, and then somebody else would fuck. I don't know. What would you do? Stare at it. So what's going on? What's going with your other? You have something going on. You have a publishing name that's doing books. Toy House Publishing. What's the story of that? Is it mostly the same group?
Well, we got the two anthologies, but we also got we got some other ones. We got a haiku book, which are some very sweet and also some very raunchy haiku by Keith Baird. He's one of the fellow editors at Piscataway House, and him and some friends came out with a collection of haiku. It's pretty entertaining at times.
Yeah, I've actually like when I heard that, you know, I'm like, oh, you got a book of haikus, and you know, you explained it to me. You were like, oh, it's just collect haikus. I was cool, you know, haikus. I don't know if that's my thing, you know. When I picture them, you know, I picture a quiet evening of just sitting there and listening to people. Me explain what it looks like a seashell or something, and I saw the guys perform the haikus from that collection, and man, they're fucking funny, dude. It's like the funniest shit. It's raunchy. It's like great jokes, really deep thoughts. You know, I can say that without sounding corny. But
they'll do the haiku death match where they kind of compete against each other and try to just make fun of each other in the 17 syllables and see what they can get away with and all.
Great. He's a big idiom guy. He's always from down in the idiom stuff. Inc. Andrew Faint is his name. He writes his Inc. And like you said, a man, some funny shit.
Yeah, Inc's great. Actually, him and Keith are coming out with one of the dual books through Piscataway House. That's where we have two authors in one book, and they're going to be working on something together, and hopefully by the end of the summer, we're hoping they might have a little collection out. So,
yeah, I'd like to try to get all those guys to come on the show and show everybody what I mean with their haiku show that they do. It's some shit, man. It's gone. Some great stuff. So what's the so what's the rest of your summer look like? What do you got planned? Anything good?
Well, as you well know, presently we got the Scataway House editors working on the Bud Smith novel. So we got that going on kind of this week and next week. We're going to send you the last bit of edits.
Copy edits, yeah.
For Toll Booth. So we're very excited about that.
Yeah, you guys are fantastic with the way you edit. And I can't make this high enough. People who aren't familiar with Idiom or Scataway, it's a press that's just an out on the seam here, because these guys are oh man, they're just the way you approached everything. Really, I'm telling you, if you guys are looking for a spot to submit your manuscripts, consider Scataway, because they're gonna be right up there on the top of the radar soon. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, like I'll tell you, I didn't really know how it was gonna happen, because your novel is pretty much one of the first books that we're putting out where it wasn't me or Keith putting it together. And when we were doing the editing process, you know, ink was involved with it. Our friend Bobby Fisher, who is one of my friends from school, he was a fiction writer up there. I got him on it. And when we first got together, when we first read your book and we're like, all right, let's talk about this, me and Keith had like a pen and pencil or a pen and paper, and we were going to write down everything we said. And then we were just talking so fast and so much about it. I was like, this is ridiculous. We can't take notes. And that's when I decided to just record our conversation. And I think we did like a good hour that first time, just talking about your book and suggestions, what we liked and didn't like.
Uh-huh.
And just as like an editing process, I was like, this is the best thing we've ever come up with.
Yeah, I felt the same way. It was great. You know, all of a sudden I'm waiting for these files to show up, this Word files that I'm dreading to going through with note after note after note. I'm just not so much the critique, just the sheer fact of I'm going to have to leaf through a couple different files to see what's what, track everything down, and all of a sudden in my email I get an MP3 that's an hour long, and it's just audio critiques, roundtable critiques, and I can't explain how much the whole process. And then you guys were cool enough to do it for a couple weeks later, a month later, we'd round two, same thing. Maybe it was a 30-minute long audio file, and think I know I'm adopting that method when you know. If I'm editing for anybody with extra people getting in to help out, I'm going to do the same thing, because that's the way to do it, man.
Nice, nice. And even what we're doing now, I'm just going to put this out there. If there are any editors listening, they're probably liking this stuff. If there's other writers, they're probably being bored to death. But our last process is we uploaded the whole story to Google Docs, and now we're just kind of doing annotations and marks within one file. That's going to have all the grammatical changes and things that you'll be able to look at next week and see pretty much the finished product that we feel should be good. So.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's great because you guys sent me the just a couple weeks ago. I haven't made any changes, but just glancing over at the beginning of the copy edits, and it was like, wow, that's like so cool to all of a sudden see. You know, I don't have any experience with real copy editing, and you're seeing all these like hieroglyphic symbols. You know, like I'm like, oh fuck, I gotta look up, see what the hell all these wavy lines mean, and all of a sudden a triangle over a letter. What the fuck does that mean?
I think when we give you the finished one next week, we'll have a little key in the beginning showing you what each thing means. So
yeah, that's great. Fucking all right.
We got the novel coming out. Let me look at my board here. We got. But we want to get involved in more festivals, we've kind of noted. Last year we did the Brooklyn Book Festival, and that was a really good experience as far as, you know, we made about 1,500 idioms, we had a huge tent, and we just stood there handing them out to all the people passing by. So we're going to look into getting some more of those, I think.
Yeah,
I think that's
great.
Actually the first place me and you met, too, right?
Yeah, that's where I met you. That was funny as hell.
Yeah, before that, we were just interacting through emails and things like that. And then, just last September, October it was. You're like, Mark Brunetti from The Idiom. I'm Bud Smith. And I was like, God damn.
Yeah.
Good to finally meet you.
Yeah, it was really cool to finally meet. It's like, it's something else, man, you know, to know somebody for so long online. And actually, it's crazy because when I say crazy, it's not too crazy. It's for our generation, it's a little weird because I met before Facebook and before, we didn't ever had a MySpace relationship, but we would communicate just through. I would send you submissions and pretty much, you know, if you'd publish something, you'd send me an email, whatever, send some idioms in the mail. So we knew each other that way for quite a few years. And when I met you in person, that was the first time I was able to put a face and a name, which is like a blast from the past now. Because I mean, it's like now I'm friends with. Forget about it. We're on Facebook. I have seen 1,500 pictures of what the hell they look like, so it's no surprise, you know. Well, that's funny. The way the world changes a little bit. So that's great that all this great stuff going on with the EDM and Piscataway House. Exciting stuff, man. I wanted to keep you on the line to talk to our next caller. He's a guy I know here in the city. He's a real interesting dude. His name is Matt, and I'm on the show today to talk about his upbringing in Pennsylvania. He actually grew up in the Mennonite community. And we're going to have him come on the show today and kind of talk to us about maybe what the difference between that and what his life is like here in New York City since he left that community. So stay on the line, Mark, all right?
Yeah,
hey, Matt, are you there? Hey, Matt, are you there? Yeah, sometimes
there.
Hey, Matt,
I'm
are you there?
I'm here, bud. How are you doing? Yeah, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, man. So what's new, man? How's it going tonight, all right?
It's going good. Enjoying the weather. It's great outside. Not a whole lot else.
Yeah, it's like skateboard weather out there, you know?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's great, yeah.
You live in my neighborhood now, kind of. You're not too far from here.
I do. A couple blocks over, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, if people who are listening, I live in Washington Heights, which is up in New York City. And Matt, you live like, man, we live by the George Washington.
Yeah, you're on 173rd and Haven, right? And I'm over on St. Nicholas or between. Yeah, so just a couple blocks over. Yep.
I took a walk over to that fruit stand by Gristiti's earlier. I got like 8 oranges for $3, and I hit the Radio Shack. So
nice.
I'm all Washington-hated up. What do you?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go out and get a couple oranges tonight here by the fruit guy here. So, yeah, what I'm planning.
Yeah, this is like the great time of year, city man. When all of a sudden all the fruits are back, there's like everywhere you look, people just out having fun.
Right.
And, we're not too far from a couple great parks. So uptown here in the city is just a really, really cool place to be, man.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
So I'm glad you were able to set aside some time to call in and talk a little bit with us.
Definitely.
I'm super ignorant about Mennonite, Amish. I know the difference really between them. Can you would you mind just starting with the basics? Explain to me. I've never seen. Yeah.
Okay. Well, a lot of people know more about the Amish community because, you know, you see a lot more of that on TV and in the news and stuff. A lot of it's not really that real anyway, but Amish and Mennonite people are basically, they believe the same thing, you know, very religious. Uh-huh. They come from the same group. They come from Europe from the same time. Amish people are just a little stricter, so they don't have, like, electricity. They don't have cars. Mennonite people basically have cars. They have electricity and, you know, a few of the modern conveniences that, you know, Amish people completely stay away from. But, you know, Mennonite people, they don't have TVs, a lot of them, no radio, you know, so it's, you know, not everything, but they have a lot more, you know, modern things. And basically Amish people, you know, they try their best to live in, you know, like you know, a couple centuries ago. They try to stay in that, like, you know, way of thinking, way of living, and they do a pretty good job of it, actually, surprisingly.
Yeah, I've never seen the, there's like a TV show, what is it, like Amish, Breaking Amish or something? Or?
Yeah, Amish Mafia,
Amish
Mafia. A show about that, and then there's a Breaking Amish. Friend, actually, I don't know if you've ever seen a show, but my friend Sabrina is one of the actors on there. She actually was like me. She was adopted into the Mennonite church, and, there's some differences, you know. It can be a little more difficult if, you're adopted in versus, like, being born right in the community. And, she's a great girl. We have a lot in common, though. And I wouldn't recommend watching the show, though, if you want to really learn about Amish and Mennonite people, because it's not real at all.
I don't have interest in seeing that show, to be honest with you. Actually, I had quite a dilemma the other day because we came home and found out that Basic Cable took away TBS from us.
Okay.
So it was like the only channel we were getting free. So now we gotta do something, man.
I see. Well,
we had like five channels and now.
Okay. I'd tell you, bud, if you want to, go to Lancaster County sometime, it's a great trip. Just go down for a weekend. Rent a car, go to Lancaster.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of great stuff down there. And you can really learn a lot more about that community and what really goes on if you actually go there and visit them and see it for yourself rather than, all that on TV and everything you see. But it's an interesting world. It's a lot different than New York City. Probably, I'd say, about as far opposite as you can get, of Mennonite and Amish would be like New York City. So it's a big difference, very big difference.
And I know a few small things about the community, Amish community.
Mm-hmm.
When someone turned 17, they're given the option to leave the community. Was it the same thing with Mennonite?
It is similar. Amish families actually, like, they recommend and they push their kids to go out and, do drugs and get drunk and, they get in a lot of trouble sometimes too. They actually encourage them to do that. And what they think it does is like gets like sow your wild oats is basically they think they're, get out there, have a good time and then, come back, join the church. And actually they say about 97% of them do, which is really surprising because they go out, hanging out with girls, drinking, everything they're not allowed to do, and up until that point. And most of them do end up coming back, joining the church, getting married, and having, like, a bunch of kids, and, process, it just keeps going. But Mennonite people actually don't encourage their children to go out and do that. And if they do, a lot of times they'll even kick them out of the house. They don't encourage that at all. That's a big difference between Amish and Mennonite, actually. My parents, they didn't want me, to go out and do all that stuff, but they didn't, they didn't really, it was a little different, with my family, but, it wasn't like they were encouraging me to go out and do everything that they taught us not to, but it's just a very religious community. They just, believe very strongly in like God and, you can go all day long about that if you want, but. But they're very set in what they believe, and it's a very interesting world. But I, it's not for me.
you felt too restricted by all the overbearing, just strict religion, pretty
exactly,
much.
Exactly, yeah.
And so when you left the
question,
go ahead.
Sure.
Okay. I was just wondering, like, how did you tell your parents that you were leaving the community, and how did they respond to it, kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, I actually, my situation was a little different than a lot of times. I'm the youngest of seven children, and my mother actually passed away about a year before I left home. So I didn't leave home. There was some different reasons, some things going on, and my family completely understood. And my dad actually had left the Mennonite community then a couple years ago. And there's a few members of my family still are Mennonite, but most of us aren't, or I shouldn't say most of us, say about half of us aren't anymore. So it was a little different with my family since they're not all hardcore, you know, conservative, you know, religious, you know, members of the church anymore. So it really, you know, at first, you know, they had to get used to it. But it's not a big deal anymore. A lot of families, they'll literally shun the children where they won't even, they come home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, they won't even eat at the same table as them. They'll set a table for them in the side of the room and, you know, they eat there. But my family would never, you know, do anything like that, thankfully.
Yeah.
I didn't have all that to deal with.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, Matt, when you left the community, where'd you go to? Where'd you move to?
I moved to L.A. I lived in Long Beach about almost a year, and then I moved up to Marina Del Rey, West L.A. for a little while, and then I ended up coming to New York, and I loved it here, and came back a couple times, and then I actually ended up moving here, which it works out great, because, you know, every time somebody getting married or, you know, funeral
yeah.
or something like that, I don't have to get a plane ticket the whole way back home. That was getting kind of old, but... Yeah, that's how I ended up here then.
Aside from all this, you know, all this talk
sure.
about your upbringing, what do you prefer? Do you prefer the East Coast or West Coast?
I'd say I prefer the East Coast. You know, it's kind of hard as far as the weather goes. Definitely the West Coast, and I think the West Coast. I think I want to go there when I have, say, a little more money and a little more, you know a little more what I'm doing, a little more set, you know, later on. I think I'd love to live in L.A. again, but a young person, you know, like me, I don't know. It's just I prefer New York. I really do.
Yeah.
But I love
yeah.
L.A. I love the weather there. I like how everything's laid back. You know, you can have a – you know, they're so different. I don't know. It's hard to even compare them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd say New York I probably like better overall.
Yeah. Mark,
and
you ever been out to L.A.?
In general, yeah.
Yeah, I went out there once. I was flown out there. It was nice, I guess. You know, everyone's always asking you, director, writer, or actor, or producer.
Oh, yeah.
That's all they
want
to know.
Yeah.
They don't care about anything else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then I hit up San Francisco. I like that town a lot better.
Oh, yeah, San Francisco is great, too. San Francisco, I think, is a lot like New York. I don't know, some people might disagree, but I think in a lot of ways it's kind of like New York.
Definitely
a lot more than, let's say, L.A., yeah.
So, Matt, now you're actually you're doing, like, you're a travel agent now, right?
Yes, I am, yep.
Which is pretty badass because I have a friend who's a surgeon, which I'm only friends with him because... Certain. I got a friend who's a lawyer, and I'm only friends with him because he's a lawyer. And I'm not saying friends with you because you're traveling, but man, it really, you know what I mean? It's great to have people to refer for the important decisions such as vacation, right?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, now is... Now is a busy time of the year. Everybody's, you know, trying to get their vacations booked and trying to fly places. Everybody, as soon as it gets warm, everybody's ready to travel again. So it's, you know, busy time of year for me again.
I want to ask you one more question about the about growing up as a Mennonite.
Sure.
Sure. How would you describe it? For instance, like now you kind of see how like. Kids on the East Coast going to regular public school, and
mm-hmm.
how would you describe what they go through on a daily basis with like coming up and going to school, as opposed to what you had when you went to school? Did you have more of like a private education, or was it a
yeah? I went to a private school, a religious
yeah.
school.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was only about 40 kids in the whole school.
40
it was a
kids,
small
yeah.
school. Yeah, so I mean it's. It's a lot different. I didn't go to public school, so I don't know exactly what all the differences would be. But like, we didn't
yeah.
have a school bus. There were so few of us. You know, we just, you know, our parents drove us to school. we didn't have like a cafeteria. We, you know, our parents packed our lunches. We took our lunches. I don't know how much different it would be than like grade school, like elementary
yeah.
school, you know. But I think, you know, there's plenty of differences.
Sure.
But, you know.
You guys didn't have to square dance, did you?
No. No.
We had square dance, and it's fucking tough.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so you, listen.
I'm
going
to go to the Mennonite community.
Yeah.
No, that was a no-no.
Did you guys get snow days when you went to school? Or is pretty
yeah,
much
we
you
did.
Were like,
actually, we didn't have near as many as like the public school because of the school bus situation. A lot of us, I actually, where my parents lived was less than a mile, actually probably more like a quarter mile. We could see the school right up the road, school and church was together. So we could always walk to school and didn't matter if it was snowing or not, you know, we could easily make it to school. So
yeah.
We had it a lot more, but we did get out earlier in the year. A lot of
That's
times,
cool.
you know, 3 weeks or so earlier than public school because of those things. We didn't
yeah.
get off on all the holidays. So I think it was all right. I always wanted to get out of school as soon as it started getting warm anyway, so never bothered me.
Well, that's cool. I'm always curious about how people, about how
yeah.
they grew up, because it says a lot about them as they become adults. But
sure.
I think it's really, really cool that you took some time to come on the show and kind of set the record straight for people who kind of aren't really sure what's going on with.
Yeah, definitely. It was great to be on here, and I guess my first time on here. You have this every night or
every Tuesday, yeah, mostly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well,
so
next time
you come on and tell me a crazy story. All right.
I will. I'll get one planned. I'll have a story
right,
next
man.
Time, bud.
All right. Thanks for calling in, man.
All right. You have a good night. All right. It was nice
right,
talking
Mark.
To you. What was the other gentleman's name? Mark?
Mark Bernetti? The Mark Bernetti?
Yeah.
He's,
it was nice talking to you, Mark.
I'm sorry. Will Smith is about to save the planet right now. I'm very engulfed in this movie.
Oh, my God. What's he?
I'm watching Independence
live.
Day.
Yeah. So Mark's watching the. Can you live tweet what's going on? What's happening right now?
Well, Will Smith is just discussing with the president about how he has to save the planet. So, very intense.
My little brother, my little brother. His name is Will Smith, and I think. I think he's even cooler than the famous Will Smith, if you ask me. My brother's pretty fucking cool, so.
Now, I don't know if this is real or not, but there was a Will Smith when I graduated. They announced his name, and I don't know if they did it as like a joke, or that might have really been his name. I mean, your brother's name is Will Smith, so. But they said Smith, and everybody laughed.
Yeah,
he got the biggest applause out of everybody.
Yeah. Welcome to that guy's life. You know, everybody fucking laughs when his name is the MV. Everyone, you fucked up name, you know. Shit. All right, Mark. Well, I'm going to take the last call of the night. I want to thank you for taking some time to talk to us about all this stuff.
Can I just do one last plug?
Please, plug away.
Yeah, I just uploaded it now. The current issue of the Idiom is on theidiommag.com. If you click on the Idiom logo, you can see the current issue up there and see some of those names we mentioned before and things like that. So.
That's cool, man. I'm going to share the link on the Facebook wall for this fucking stupid show, and I'm also going to share it on my, my page and stuff. So, people, thanks for plugging it. The fucking ADM rocks, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. And we'll be around.
Catch you in the streets.
All right.
Okay, and last on the show, Mariah, are you there?
Hello, yes, I am.
How you doing, okay?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Oh, I can hear you. You sound
okay,
great.
Good.
You're coming through really loud, really clear. And
okay, good.
For everybody listening, Mariah, you're calling from where?
Oregon. Little
Oregon.
Town called McMinnville. Yep.
Oh, that's
I live
great.
In McMinnville.
Now you're associated with what press are you calling? You're associated with what?
We call it, We call it the Blue Hour. Yeah, we've been going since November. And we've published one anthology, and this is our first single author collection available now, Better Cigarettes and Other Poems by Philip Vermoss.
Yes. Philip was running the website. He still runs it, Misfits Miscellany. And so he has a book out, a chapbook out with you guys, Blue Hour Press, and it's called Better Cigarettes, right?
Yeah, Better Cigarettes and Other Poems. Because the featured poem, the first poem you see when you open the cigarette when you open the pack, just kidding, when you open the book, is Better Cigarette. And it's just a story about relationships with people in general, and that one is an emphasis on intimacy in general towards women.
Yeah.
And I would call his writing compelling because of the level of honesty that you don't find often in writing, I think, and especially poetry. You know, I think that sometimes people want to put excessive adjectives, and I like it more when people just get to the point sometimes, and I think that Philip accomplished that in his book, which is why we decided to publish him.
Yeah, he's a really cool dude. He's a good guy. He's got great writing floating around. I'm excited to check out this. I really am. Do you have a copy of the book around you?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. I can't hear you. What did you say?
Do you have a copy of the chapbook on hand?
His book is available through our website at thebluewiremagazine.com,
yeah.
And then we also have it as an ebook as well. Through Lulu.
That's pretty cool because I'm sorry, I was just clicking. I was trying to find a poem of his to read, but I got kicked off Facebook here.
Oh, okay.
Somehow. Okay, so it's interfering with Facebook. It's not happening. But so what was your Do you edit there? Are you
Yes, I'm an editor, and my friend is the co-editor, Susie Sweetland Garay, and we both did this sort of out of mutual interest in being able to share people's writing and artwork. Our emphasis isn't just writing; we also publish photography and art. We like to promote people that are just trying to make it.
Yeah,
you know, and have a lot of talent because there's so many talented, educated people out here now, and they're undervalued mostly because of the global economy and how easy it is to have access to goods. We've cheapened things by the internet, but we've also made things better at the same time by being able to do things like this, speak with you, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's like there's a lot to be said about what people can do with just getting their art out there for, I mean, you might not make any money at it, but if that's not your goal, you're going to have a great time, you know?
Yeah, exactly. If one was to only make money, then the product wouldn't have as much life in it. I think sometimes what we do with a passion, you just go, well, let's see how this goes, and then it takes off or it doesn't. But either way, you believe in what you do.
Yeah. So do you write yourself?
Yeah, I do when I can. I've been published in Silver Birch Press, their anthologies.
Uh-huh.
And then I've been published online a few places. I write poems mostly because it's what I have time for.
Sure.
You know.
And, I talked to one of my favorite writers last week. He said the same thing. My friend James Claffey. He was trying to call in tonight too. I'm not sure. If we're gonna find him here. He said the same thing that he writes short fiction and he writes like flash fiction mostly, poetry, and the same thing, just like the time, like the time you have for it, you know, it's really
really. And there's a lot in life that you have to balance. You know, I have a full time job and I have a 3-year-old. So between the two, I just, you know, get it out whenever I can, poem wise, and then see what happens. Throw it out in the ether, you know. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and I did bring. I hope that Philip is able to call in himself down the road. But if you want, I have one poem I can read to you, if you'd like.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, that's what I was getting at before. I asked if you had anything on hand. Because I was trying to find poems to read online, but they're kicking me off. So, yeah, go. Please read. Please go.
Okay. I'm grabbing it. The connection's a little spotty for some reason. So.
Okay.
But the one I chose is called I'm Telling You. And it says, it's a poisoned girl will poison you, and you'll take the two poisons. Once poisoned, only poisons nourish. Purify or die. But once poisoned by poisons, which began as pleasures, purity is death itself. The death of the man who you've come to be, he who could only have sought a poisoned girl if he ever was to be himself. And that's just one. Because other ones are of greater length, but they tell stories of his life in general. in South Africa.
He's living in South Africa now?
Yeah, that's part of the reason why he had trouble calling in was because he is in rural Johannesburg, and it's very difficult for him to have internet connection or phone in general.
Oh God, yeah.
And that's what makes this also interesting is the fact that, you know, we have our perspective as Americans, but it's good to learn about other people and what it takes to go get by from day to day. The things that we have easy access to is difficult for others.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm looking at the preview file for his picture.
Yeah, I think I put a Word doc up there, didn't I?
Yeah. So, you know, I went to Lulu and I clicked on the preview preview poems from the chat for anybody who's interested.
Yeah.
Poem by Philip Ramos. This opens it up. This one, according to this file, this good reason.
Yeah.
Not that I
one.
Love. Yeah. So
yeah.
It's good reason. Not that I don't want love. Just it's ever good reason. But without love, there is no good reason.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. And I was glad to go through Lulu, too, because of the fact that the author owns the rights to the book. You know, so it was a good experience going through Lulu. Yeah, I recommend that for ebooks.
With doing Create Space, you're losing rights to the book?
I thought so, but I might be wrong. I spent a lot of time reading over the contracts, and that was the conclusion I came to.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, don't completely directly quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure, so.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all good. I'm not,
yeah,
I'm not
I know.
Quoting
I'm
anybody.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this opportunity to talk to you, though, Bud, and I also wanted to mention that I found it interesting what you guys were discussing with the Mennonite culture. I was not raised, you know, Mennonite, but I was grew up in a strict Christian household and has experienced some similar experiences. So it was nice to hear that conversation. It was definitely something I could relate to, too.
Do you feel like you've moved away from your religious upbringing? Has it affected you as an adult?
I go to Methodist church because it's low pressure and I still get a nice feeling when I go. But beyond that, you know, I've kind of let go of a lot of things. I was raised in a Messianic Jewish. So that was a pretty interesting, confusing category.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For Jews, we believe in the Messiah. So
yeah.
We even went to the Jews for Jesus in gatherings. So,
oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys were Jews who believed that Jesus was the Savior. Is that what that means?
Yeah, my stepmother is a Messianic Jew. So yes, she was raised Jewish and then accepted the Savior. So they held on to some of the Jewish rituals and then incorporated Christ into their teachings too. So yeah, it was confusing.
Well, I mean, you know, most religions are for. Everybody who's gone away from me, not so much while you're alone in it, but it's the way society kind of pits you against what you hold
I mean,
truth when you're young, you know.
ultimately the idea is supposed to be about love, and that's, yeah, you know, mostly
exactly
why I do what I do. So.
Yeah, I hear you. That's really cool. I'm really glad I got a chance to talk to you too about this. I hope everybody checked out my Facebook.
And again, Bud, I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, and I do hope that Philip will be able to call you down the road as well.
Oh, yeah.
And
so
also, we're open to submissions anytime. If somebody wants to send a submission to us, we can't guarantee we'll get back to you right away, but we do like to read.
Yeah, I hear you there. That's always a good time.
All right. Well, you have a great evening.
Have a great night.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, I want to thank everybody for the time to call in, everybody who's listening. That's going to do it for tonight, and I'll see you all soon.